This is Suno India production. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.
Two of my friends sent me the trailer of the same TV show the day it premiered, asking me if I had seen it or would I be covering it in this podcast.
I'm taking people on a journey of self-discovery.
I need help to elevate my life.
As an international etiquette teacher, I bring out the best in people.
So you're not moving your body.
The trailer was for Mind Your Manners, a Netflix reality show about, well, etiquette classes and makeover journeys. I know manifesting is all the rage these days, and given how much I've complained about the lack of reliable or interesting information about finishing schools, the producers and I wondered, did we just manifest this show? All jokes apart, Made to Order has taken 2 years to complete. It has been a long journey and one in which I was often living in my own head with my ideas. But timing is everything, because just weeks before the trailer released, I got an email from somebody who had come across the podcast and also happened to finish a PhD on the topic of grooming schools. Not only was there something contemporary in pop culture out there now, but also academic research. So it made perfect sense to invite her on the show. Hi, I'm Kavita Devadas. I'm the host of Made to Order, a new podcast from Suno India, where we examine the world of finishing schools, the makeovers, and the transformations they promise from the lens of self-love, gender, culture, and class. This is episode 5, Through the Eyes of Another. My first conversation with Suchismita, who's the researcher, runs well over 3 hours. It was exciting to speak to someone who was working in depth on the same topic, but had a very different approach.
Hi, Kavita. Thanks for having me here. So my name is Suchismita Chattopadhyay, and I very recently submitted my PhD in Anthropology and Sociology from the Graduate Institute of International and Development Studies in Geneva. And I'm primarily, like, my professional life has pretty much been in Delhi, but I'm a Bengali and I was born and brought up in Kerala. I studied in Delhi University and then later in Jawaharlal Nehru University before going off to Geneva for my PhD.
At the time of recording this, Suchismita had just finished defending her thesis. I asked her what drew her to the topic of finishing schools or grooming institutions.
My research, interestingly, is very close to the podcast that you have been having till now, which is this, that I have been looking at the grooming institutions that have been spread across in Delhi. So by grooming institutions, I mean a range of institutions starting from spoken English classes to finishing schools, image consulting and personality development courses. So, yeah. So, I mean, I didn't realize this, but I felt like this question of what do people do in order to fit in has always been there in my mind. So, for instance, when I came to Delhi from a very small town, which is Trivandrum, I realized that in this elite women's college that I was a part of, there was implicitly a pressure to fit into a certain mold of that college.
So Chismita talks about her experience of first trying to fit into the educational institutions in Delhi, where initially she felt out of place. And then the realization that it was easier for her because her schooling was in English medium institutions, her caste and class background, all of which gave her a certain advantage when it came to navigating these spaces compared to some of her peers. Hence her curiosity about the things people have to do to try and fit in. She speaks how this was also something she noticed and was relevant in the service industry that sprung up in the 2000s.
For the first time, I went to a mall in Delhi, and this was also the time when the malls were coming up in Delhi, especially in South Delhi. And I saw that there was a huge labor force, that is a service industry, which were performing a range of activities which just seemed very new at that time. In terms of, you know, the kind of things that the malls were serving, the service that they were providing, the English that they were speaking, the way they were dressed, the way the men and women would be looking, and they would also be trying, you know, to sort of attempt a certain kind of a global or rather an international ambience that the mall was trying to provide as well as the brand. And I definitely began thinking that all of this cannot be natural, that there must be a place, there must be something that all of them must be undergoing in terms of, you know, maybe a course, maybe a orientation program or something. So the deeper I began to look into the people around me, especially, you know, the service sector, and this is also the time, I think, after 2010, in like around 2013, 2014, I began noticing that there were a lot of these new institutions that were also coming up, in the sense that I would see advertisements of personality development courses. I mean, yeah, they were always there. But because I saw so many of these young men and women attempting a certain kind of a self or fashioning a certain kind of a self, which made me also pay attention to these courses. So initially, I thought it's just maybe a spoken English or a personality development course. But then the more I started looking around, I realized that this is a minefield in terms of the number of institutions that are there in Delhi.
The new industries and investments prompted by globalization created different kinds of job opportunities in India. Accessing these opportunities meant sometimes looking the part, speaking the language, embodying the product or service being sold. I mean, if you walked into a Revlon store in Mumbai, then you expect the salesperson to be dressed and speaking in a certain way. So Chismita's PhD research began around 2016, with the actual fieldwork starting a year later.
So it was between 2017, 2018 and 2019 is when I actually conducted the research in Delhi. And this is when I also took admission in these schools, in the spoken English classes, in the finishing schools, and sat as a client in an image consultant's office. And I did the research. So it was an ethnographic research where I did participant observation, where I sat as a student myself and I did all of these courses, a range of courses beginning from spoken English to appearance management.
Just like me, she discovered there's absolutely no standardization in this industry because there were so many different kinds of finishing schools or whatever they wanted to call themselves. There were other findings which were similar to my observations. The suspicions from the schools or consultants, the desire to get maximum PR coverage out of these interviews, and that accessing these spaces was incredibly hard.
And funnily, there was this one other place which also told me that, you know, if I was a white woman, they would have gladly accepted me because then they could have put my photo on their flex. They could have advertised me as one of their success cases or as someone who's endorsing this particular place. But well, I was a brown woman who was at a disadvantage in her own country. So like this colonial hangover was very interesting to see. But then what then I realized was this, that this colonial hangover was also a form of aspiration, because if you see, most of the spoken English classes have names like, you know, Oxford School of English or the American School of whatever. And there is always a credential of international or a foreign or a British sounding, that word has to be there. Like, for instance, there was, I think, another school which is called the British Academy of something something.
I've talked about this in the previous episodes, this phenomena where the finishing school teachers would emphasize on their international training. So Chismita and I discussed this kind of labeling in a country like India, where the words international and imported have a certain kind of a weightage. Presenting the international accreditations and affiliations help these schools demonstrate that they have an edge over other similar organizations in a highly competitive industry. The COVID-19 pandemic and social media had driven much of the work online or in a hybrid format, where now anyone could make short instructional videos or have Zoom calls with their clients. There was no degree or license needed to be in this industry or to be a practicing professional. At the same time, the word international meant that they were offering a package of not just a course module, but also a global experience.
Now, this also serves a purpose for a lot of the moneyed elite, because It's about identifying with certain spaces and assuming that, oh, if I go to this finishing school, I will get a certain kind of exposure, which will prepare me when I go for my trips abroad. So there is a way in which this accreditation also works to lure clients. And it also works to sort of paint an aspirational picture of our training is inspired from these countries. So what we are giving you over here is not something that is desi or local, but something which is definitely global or international.
Accessing these spaces to do her fieldwork proved to be a real challenge. She had to hire a consultant herself, which is an interesting story that I had to hear.
Yeah, so this happened, like this whole encounter with the image consultant happened when I was at the peak of feeling frustrated that nothing in my fieldwork was working out. I wasn't moving. I was sitting in my house for days figuring out how do I get out and how do I start accessing these classes.
So just with a booked a paid appointment with somebody who offered sessions in image management. She did not initially disclose that she was a researcher during the phone call. Fast forward to the actual meeting day, the consultant was making her do these quizzes, but didn't really get why Suchismita, who was highly educated and came from a certain class, wanted to attend these classes. Which is when Suchismita told her about her PhD, and that she wasn't getting any access to the personality development and etiquette schools, particularly the ones in West Delhi.
So she then decided that, oh, what we can do is we can actually design sessions which will sort of, you know, help you understand what image management and image consulting is all about. And that way it helps with your PhD. But also while you're doing this, we can also focus on one aspect of it, which is right now appearance and maybe communication. And that helps you with, you know, getting access to spaces in West Delhi. So I did this particular, you know, she assessed me and then she said that I was completely unfit to get into West Delhi. So then she said that, oh, this kind of, you know, so I was dressed in field. So what, I know, ethnographic field work or whatever, this kind of field work always demand, you know, you're always asked to not stand out. You're supposed to blend in. You're supposed to sort of not dress up, rather dress down or dress accordingly to the field. And I was always dressing up in salwar kameez. I would not speak so much in English because I thought that maybe if I spoke in Hindi, I might be getting more information out, or that if I don't dress all that well, or if I'm just in my very regular clothes and looking a little plain, maybe I'll get more attention in the class and maybe there's more points on which I can improve. And I thought all of that might help in my research. But this image consultant of mine, let's call her Mrs. Malik. So Mrs. Malik told me that none of this is going to work because I really need to stand out. And this is also because she ended up telling me how in a place like Delhi, and these are things which I knew, but I thought that I didn't want to kind of apply to this kind of common sense and use my caste and class privilege. So what she ended up telling me was this, that if I have to be in the business of grooming, I really need to assert that I have something to offer, be it in terms of the way I look, be it in the way I speak English, or in the way I present myself. So while we were doing sessions on appearance management, which started out with, you know, clothing, which started out with how to dress. So she gave me a style scale and I had a home, and she used to give me homework of figuring out how to dress formally or how to do this power dressing from the elements that I had in my closet and like even a little bit of makeup, but more importantly, understanding a lot about image and understanding about what she calls appearance management.
Delhi is one of those cities with a checkered history, which many communities have made their own. But it is also engulfed in stereotypes about money, privilege, and political rivalries. But why West Delhi specifically?
To mention a little bit about West Delhi. So West Delhi is one pocket of Delhi where it is a post-partition, it's a post-partition refugee colony, and now it houses some of the most richest households in Delhi. And it's primarily, there are a lot of business families that dominate the areas in Punjabi Bagh and Pashchim Vihar. And there are also a couple of finishing schools that exist in West Delhi. And West Delhi, like the club road that you find in West Delhi, is that way what a lot of people would call nouveau riche. And it is defined as nouveau riche. And I'm not labeling any of it in that sense. But I also wanted to explore the finishing school, and I wanted to explore the culture and the consumption culture in West Delhi.
And this two-way process began to work. She was able to finally get access to these coveted spaces.
Like basically change a lot of my own fieldwork practices. I did start getting more access. So that is when the entire world of, you know, the finishing school opened up. I got access into this kitty party etiquette, which was done over this high tea drinking workshop that happened at the Oberoi. And so there were a lot of spaces and a lot of places and people that I could access. And similarly, like when I started going to the spoken English classes, because I started speaking in English and I consciously spoke in English and not switched to Hindi immediately, I realized that I could also then double up as the teacher's assistant. I was given more responsibility. So that way, it was interesting that it was an image consultant who I was researching on ended up somewhere helping me a lot with my own fieldwork.
When I talk about the time that has gone into the show, I also reflect on how much it has evolved from the time I came across the Dulhan poster. I arrive with an opinion about finishing schools, but I've had to really open my mind about why people think these schools will make a difference to them. I've had to look at it from a lens of compassion and complexity, especially because these schools are only the surface of some hard truths about our society. I share this with Suchasmita, but I'm also curious about her own personal journey outside of the research.
What are the things that you were surprised by that didn't kind of maybe go in with your initial assumptions?
So when I started out, I somehow always thought that personality development and this kind of a grooming is... I expected somehow that there are going to be more women in my class than men. And I also... thought that, I mean, I was initially not very sure as to what it would be, like what these classes would be. And I also thought that they would be perpetuating a lot of gender stereotypes and I might be constantly frustrated or I might be rolling my eyes. But I was also very pleasantly surprised, and it also made me look at my fieldwork and my interlocutors in a very different way. So, for instance, when I first started, and I'm not including the West Delhi Finishing School, which was only for women, like I'm not including that. But otherwise, wherever I went, so be it these multiple personality development classes that I ended up attending, demo classes that I interviewed, I would always find that the men outnumbered the women. And although there is a certain gendering of grooming that happens through the lessons, but at the same time, I was also surprised by the gender ratio in the class was quite skewed. Like men who were just out of school or were there in their 20s and 30s outnumbered most of the women. And in a way, it was also interesting to see how the men would think that the women had it easier because they somehow innately are better suited for service industry and they were trying to feminize themselves, which led to very interesting conversations. And at the same time, the one thing that I did not expect, but maybe I should have seen it coming, was during my spoken English classes, some of the main motivations for a lot of the young men to take up these classes were so that they could impress women. So that, you know, they a lot of them were convinced that it's not like most women were impressed by a certain kind of polish and personality. And it was not really about being rough and manly, which I thought was very, I was quite surprised. But then it also like, you know, gave way to different kinds of masculinity and different articulations of it. But that's a different thing altogether.
Aap chahe job karo. चाहे बिजनेस करो, एक स्किल ऐसी है जो आपके अंदर होनी ही चाहिए, उसके बिना आप लाइफ में आगे नहीं बढ़ सकते, वो है कम्युनिकेशन स्किल। सब मानते हैं इस बात को? यस और नो? ये एक ऐसी क्वालिटी है जो आज नहीं तो कल आपको अपने अंदर डेवलप करनी ही पड़ेगी, फिर चाहे आपको नौकरी चाहिए चाहे छोकरी चाहिए।
But then I would still emphasize that there's a disproportionate burden on women when it comes to grooming, and this is something that you have covered in the previous classes. But just very briefly, in a lot of these personality development classes where the men outnumbered the women, there still used to be like separate sessions for women when it came to grooming, when it came to physical grooming, that is. So when it came to appearance and when it came to how they should look and make up and so on. Whereas the boys were essentially asked to be neat, get a nice haircut, and be respectful towards women. And so in a lot of these things, there was a very practical way in which they took on this process. And at the same time, it also humbled me to see how desperately people were trying and how seriously and how serious they were about, say, getting their interview skills right, because they have already, they have cleared the written rounds of the UPSC maybe say 3 times, but they're always losing out in the interview rounds. And a lot of these things are supposed to be what we might think people who are from English medium schools basic, but it's not. They all need to be learned, they need to be practiced, and at the same time you also need to speak it in an effortless manner, and all of it is a struggle, and which to me, honestly, to see it in that sense was, I mean, I would say inspiring in many ways, because I don't know if I would be willing to be so vulnerable in front of a bunch of people and would be learning every day where there is someone correcting every word that I speak. So that way, the grooming schools also became a space for these kids and also for a lot of these women to come socialize. It also became a form of community for them, and for a lot of people, especially for a lot of young men and women, it also became a space for the first time where they actually indulge in extracurricular activities without anybody making fun of them. So nobody was making fun of a Haryanvi accent as much, but everybody was trying and everybody was helping. And for a lot of these students, it was a very new way of learning, where it was not rote learning, but for instance, you actually had to talk about yourself. You had to express yourself, things which were alien for a lot of people. And I honestly did not expect to be part of such scenes.
The community Suchismita talks of is found within group classes or residential schools. Something that Jyotsana, if you remember the young lady from Good Shepherd Finishing School, had said that helped her navigate extremely challenging course and school restrictions. It was beginning to sound like a happy family now though, where everyone gets along and they help each other. I asked Suchismita, where are the people who would rupture this?
There was a 20-year-old, I think. Yeah, she was 20. Chirped up because we were talking about modes of behavior. So she was like, so ma'am, if I want to go on a date, how should I be behaving? What should I do when I'm on a date? And there was a pin drop silence in class. Nobody knew what to say. Clearly, I'm not very sure if this was a very woman-like behavior to pipe up and ask how one should conduct themselves on a date. So the instructor said that, oh, why don't you, she looked a little, I don't think she was expecting that question. So she immediately said, oh, why don't you meet me after class? So after class, I was there. So I saw that this girl who had asked this very important question, and this was the only question in the entire class, I think. And this girl was there, and I think she was waiting for her driver to come. So I asked her, very casually, so did you get an answer to your question? So she immediately made a face and she was like, no. She said, I just have to be well-dressed.
This question opened the door for conversations between Suchismita and the young woman. The young woman felt disappointed because the course was not preparing her with communication skills and things that really mattered to her. She was training to be a lawyer and wanted a finishing school, which would teach women how to win arguments against the male members of her family, against the male members of her classroom.
She didn't feel such a transformation happen to her, although she acknowledged that this process is something that is slow. So then I asked her, like, you know, then why is she still attending these courses? So she, I remember she very candidly laughed and said, I want to be attractive. I really want to be like a very graceful woman. I want to be like one of these Bollywood divas. And at the same time, she also had many grudges against the finishing school. And these are very interesting grudges. And she had already figured that with the body language classes, she told me that, you know, all they want is women to take less and less space. So it is, you fold yourself physically. So this not spreading your knees, not like, you know, sitting comfortably, but you always had to sit in an uncomfortable way. Your gestures could not be too big. So they don't want women to take space.
Sachaspata likes to call these situations disruptions, and I couldn't agree more. Looking back on my conversations with her, I'm struck by how difficult it is to even understand what makes a person real and where the performance is. As surprised and aghast as we may be with finishing schools, most of us would have encountered some form of it ourselves where we defer to social or professional codes of what is expected of us. The first episode of Mind Your Manners, the Netflix show that I mentioned earlier in this episode, has international etiquette expert Sarah Jane Ho working with one of her clients, Stephanie Osifo. Stephanie is a young 25-year-old black woman who's thinking of moving out of her parents' house. But she's also a hard-drinking, partying adult whose lifestyle her parents do not approve of. So the entire episode is devoted to making Stephanie less slutty, less loud, less out there. She receives lessons on how to peel and eat a banana using a knife and a fork, how to enunciate while speaking, how to dress when not clubbing. Halfway through this episode, Sarah encourages Stephanie to try a more natural look without as many layers of makeup. Stephanie refuses at first, then revealing one of the reasons why she's scared to see her bare face. The reason why she dresses and walks the way she does is because of her past, where she was bullied for eczema and then the scars. As she struggles in this moment, Sarah takes off her own makeup as well, also revealing how she covers up her freckles because she hates them. This makes for good heartfelt TV, except that Stephanie isn't excited with her less caked-on look. It isn't the fairy tale finish the camera is hoping for. Both of them acknowledge change is hard, but I think who or what exactly needs to change is harder to figure out. I don't know if anyone will ever tell Suchismita's young lawyer friend, the sprightly young woman, this. But by even asking those disruptive questions, she was claiming space that was never designed to accommodate that kind of curiosity. Subverting the desire to fit in a way that makes sense to you can be the beginning of accepting a self that is made up of many interconnected parts.
Thank you for listening to this episode. You can now listen to all our episodes on our Android and iPhone app. Download it now.